Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Bruce Albert, Christopher Jones Cruz, John Russell, Brian Lynn, and Anne Ball. Later, Jill Robbins and John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Bruce Albert.
The U.S. presidential election is getting closer. The latest average of major polls shows Democrat Hillary Clinton leading Republican Donald Trump by 3.3 percentage points, according to RealClearPolitics.com. On August 10th, that same average of 9 polls had Clinton up by 7.7 percentage points. A new poll Wednesday by CNN ORC had Trump ahead by 2 points, 45% to 43% among likely voters. Larry Sabato is director of the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia. He said, "The tightening is natural." Sabato said it is because the bounce Clinton received in polls after the Democratic Party convention in July has gone. Sabato said Clinton still leads in most of the important swing states that will decide the presidential election. Swing states are states where both Democrats and Republicans have a good chance of winning. There's no guarantee she will win, but the odds currently favor her, Sabato said. In the United States, the candidate who wins the election is not always the one who receives the most votes. The election is decided by the Electoral College. Each state has seats in the Electoral College. States with larger populations have more seats. Trump was very happy about the new CNN poll showing him leading among likely voters. Earlier CNN polls had him losing to Clinton. "Their big poll came out today that Trump is winning," he said. "It's good psychology. I know that for a fact because people that didn't call me yesterday, they are calling me today. So that's the way life works, right?" A close race might increase the importance of two minor party presidential candidates, Libertarian Party candidate Gary Johnson and Green Party candidate Jill Stein. In the new CNN poll, 7% of likely voters support Johnson, 2% back Stein. Those low numbers for Johnson and Stein are surprising because large numbers of voters say they doubt whether Trump or Clinton would have the ability to lead the country. A new 50-state Washington Post Survey Monkey poll showed these results. 55% of registered voters say a Clinton presidency would threaten the well-being of the United States, and 61% say a Trump presidency would threaten the nation's well-being. Nate Silver heads the political website 538.com, named for the number of voting seats in the Electoral College. He still thinks Clinton is leading, but he says he is less sure than before. The reason Silver is not sure is that so many voters, about 20%, are telling pollsters that they are undecided or they will vote for a minor party candidate. Silver gives Trump better odds of winning than most other experts who use polls and other information to predict election results. But he said there is also a significant chance of a Clinton landslide or win by a very large percentage. A close race could increase the importance of the four televised candidate debates. The three presidential debates will probably be for only Clinton and Trump without the minor candidates. The fourth, for the vice presidential candidates, will probably just be for Republican Mike Pence and Democrat Tim Kaine. The first presidential debate takes place September 26th. The election is November 8th. Sabato, the University of Virginia expert, said it is possible a very good debate by one of the candidates or a major mistake by a candidate might cause people to change their opinions. But usually, Sabato said, voters watch debates with their opinions already settled. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Many countries require young men to serve in the armed forces. But in the United States, military service is voluntary. And joining the U.S. military is not an easy process. Staff Sergeant Terrell Thomas joined the Air Force 9 years ago. He now works as a military recruiter in Woodbridge, Virginia. His job is to get volunteers to join the U.S. Armed Forces.
At the time I was going to school, I was paying for school out of my pocket. And I was like, man, this is tough. And I was staying at home. My parents, I was like, I don't know if I like this as much anymore. So I went in, talked to a recruiter. He was cool. He broke it down for me. And next thing you know, I'm in.
Benjamin Spar volunteered for the military. He says other members of his family have served in the armed forces.
My mother was enlisted in the Air National Guard, and my father was an officer in the Air Force, so I was accustomed to that lifestyle from a young age, moving around.
The armed forces pays its members to attend school, both while they are on active duty and after they leave the military. But not everyone can join the armed forces. There are age limits, and volunteers must be successful at mental and physical tests. They must also not be abusing alcohol or taking other drugs. Training for new recruits is difficult and intense. The recruits must be strong and in good health. An increasing number of women are joining the military. Madison Foote is one of them.
It's just the push-ups I'm worried about. I'm not very good at push-ups, but I think I can do everything else.
Some Americans volunteer for the armed forces even when their parents object. The parents are worried about their children because the military deploys troops to many dangerous areas throughout the world. Oludare Ogunmadewa is a new recruit. He says not everyone in his family supports his decision to enlist in the military.
Yeah, my parents are worried. My whole family is worried as well, but it's a risk I feel it's necessary for myself, more for my children, to secure their future.
The United States ended forced enlistment in 1973, during the Vietnam War. Now, recruits voluntarily sign an agreement to stay in the military for 3 to 6 years, depending on their chosen job. Some volunteers choose to stay longer. Staff Sergeant Thomas says that is because they discover that serving in the military is unlike any other job they could have.
A lot of veterans that serve their 20, 30 years, the main thing that they talk to me about, especially when they bring their children to the office, is the camaraderie they established with the people they met.
I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
The self-declared Republic of Somaliland is exporting millions of sheep and goats to Saudi Arabia for use as sacrificial offerings. These offerings are very important for the millions of Muslims going to Mecca for religious reasons. Their trip, a religious requirement, is called the Hajj. 60% of Somaliland's gross domestic product, the value of all its goods and services, come from livestock sales to the Middle East. So do 70% of its jobs. The animals, once sold in the markets, are taken by truck to the Red Sea port of Berbera. There, they wait in quarantine for weeks while they receive blood tests and vaccinations. In the past, accusations of disease among Somaliland livestock led Saudi Arabia to temporarily ban imports of its animals. Ali Mohammed Guled is an expert on animal health. He says the Berbera quarantine holds over 1 million animals at the height of the Hajj. He says Somaliland takes the health of its livestock seriously. After the restrictions are lifted, sheep and goats are loaded onto ships, often at night when the air is cooler. A single ship can hold between 20,000 and 120,000 animals. Somaliland now faces competition from Sudan, Australia, and other countries that also export livestock to Saudi Arabia. Abdi Osman Hadji is a researcher with the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. He says Somaliland must modernize its industry to stay ahead. He adds that Somaliland needs to treat its animals better, too. The export of animals from Somaliland to Saudi Arabia remains important for both countries. I'm John Russell.
A new study shows a vaccine designed to prevent dengue fever could actually be making people sick. Dengue infects an estimated 400 million people worldwide each year. The virus spreads to human beings through the bite of an insect, the mosquito. Most people who get dengue suffer health problems like those resulting from a mild case of influenza, like a higher than normal body temperature. But the illness is more severe the second time a person gets it. In serious cases, it can cause bleeding inside the body and even death. About 25,000 people a year die from the infection. The drug Dengvaxia is so far the only vaccine approved for use against dengue. Several countries, including Brazil, Mexico, Costa Rica, Paraguay, and the Philippines, have already approved use of the drug. But health officials are still trying to decide the best way to release the vaccine. Trials of Danvaxia involved more than 30,000 people in 10 countries. Among young people, the drug was found to reduce infections by 60% and hospitalizations by 80%. But over time, many of those vaccinated got seriously ill with dengue. Researchers from Britain and the United States studied the results of the tests. The researchers were from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, Imperial College London, and the University of Florida. They found that the vaccine acted as a first infection in people who had not had the virus before. The researchers reported their findings in the journal Science. The researchers say they are concerned that people who get infected a second time after the vaccine can get severely sick. This could explain why young children especially were getting ill. They had not lived long enough to get a first infection. Based on the findings, the World Health Organization is warning healthcare workers not to give the vaccine to anyone younger than 9. But data showed that people other than children were getting severe dengue cases if they had the vaccine but were not infected before they received it. What we suggest is maybe having been exposed to dengue in the past is more important than age itself, said Isabel Rodriguez Baracker of the Bloomberg School. The study found that the vaccine should not be a problem in countries with many cases of dengue. In such areas, Dengvaxia was found to reduce severe sickness and hospitalizations by 20% to 30%. But the researchers warned that in countries where only 10% of people have been infected with dengue, the vaccine needs to be carefully used. Ideally, Rodriguez Baracker said, people should be tested before getting vaccinated to see if they have been infected in the past. The researchers are also looking forward to trial results from additional new dengue vaccines. I'm Brian Lynn.
One American astronaut and two Russians landed safely in Kazakhstan Wednesday after spending nearly 6 months on the International Space Station. The U.S. space agency, NASA, announced that American astronaut Jeff Williams and Russian cosmonauts Alexei Ochian and Oleg Skirposka returned to Earth this week. Their journey from the space station to Earth took about 3.5 hours. Astronaut Jeff Williams has now spent more time in orbit than any other American. He has spent 534 days in space during 4 separate missions. It is a Russian cosmonaut who holds the world record. Gennady Padalka has spent 879 days in space. NASA wrote about Jeff Williams' experience at the space station. The U.S. Space Agency said Williams performed 5 spacewalks during his time there. During one of the spacewalks, Williams installed a station where commercial space flights can stop. NASA said Williams played an important role in getting the space station ready for a private U.S. space industry, not just government-operated missions. Williams also commented on his experience on social media. He posted a picture of Earth's outer atmosphere and wrote, "I will certainly miss this view." Russian Anatoly Ivanishin took command after Williams left the station. The Russian cosmonaut remains in the space station with American Kate Rubins and Japan's Takoya Inishi. I'm Ann Ball.
From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. English has many patterns. Learning and mastering these patterns can help you improve your writing and speaking skills. They can also help you do better on your next grammar test. Today, we explore a common verb pattern, the transitive verb pattern. This pattern is common in writing, speaking, and even on language tests, such as the test of English as a foreign language. To get you started thinking about transitive verbs, consider this stanza from Preface to a 20-volume Suicide Note by the famous author Amiri Baraka.
"And now, each night I count the stars. And each night I get the same number. And when they will not come to be counted, I count the holes they leave."
By the end of this story, you will understand one transitive verb pattern that Baraka uses in this stanza.
Unlike intransitive verbs, transitive verbs take one or more complements. Complements, in this case, refer to nouns or noun phrases that are immediately to the right of the verb in the sentence. There are several types of transitive verbs, but they all have one thing in common, a direct object.
In its most basic form, the direct object is the noun phrase that follows a transitive verb. A noun phrase is a noun and all the words and phrases that describe it. The basic transitive verb pattern is this.
Noun phrase 1 plus transitive verb plus noun phrase 2.
Transitive verbs are often action words. One way to know if the noun phrase is a direct object is if it is the receiver of the action of the verb. For example,
Mary hit the softball. Mary is a noun, hit is a transitive verb, and the softball is a noun phrase.
You can tell that the softball is receiving the action, hit. However, the direct object does not always have to be the receiver of an action. Consider this sentence.
My family enjoyed the concert.
In this sentence, it is hard to say that the direct object, the concert, is really receiving an action. So this leads us to another way to think of the direct object. It is the answer to a what or whom question. Consider these examples.
Dirty laundry covered
what?
The bedroom floor. We enjoyed
what?
the concert. The teacher helped.
Whom?
Her student.
Once again, asking the what or whom question will not work all of the time, but it can be a useful strategy to help you recognize the direct object.
So, if it can be difficult to find the direct object, how can you tell if a verb is transitive? There are two reliable ways to check. One reliable way to test if a verb is transitive is to change it to the passive voice. Think back to the example sentence, Mary hit the softball. If you change it to the passive voice, the sentence would be, the softball was hit by Mary. If you can change the sentence from active to passive voice, then the verb is probably transitive. You can read more about the passive voice in a previous Everyday Grammar story.
A second way to check if a verb is transitive is to think about the two noun phrases surrounding a verb. This strategy, say Robert Funk and Martha Kohn, two English grammar experts, is the best way to identify a transitive verb. Here is the basic idea. If the two noun phrases refer to different things, then you know the verb is transitive. Think back to the sentence, Mary hit the softball. The subject, Mary, refers to one thing, while the direct object, the softball, refers to a different thing. In technical terms, you could say the two noun phrases have different referents. In English, words that come after a verb often give information about the verb. Looking at what comes after a verb can really help you figure out the meaning of a verb, even if you do not know it.
Now, think back to the stanza of Amiri Baraka's poem.
And now, each night I count the stars, and each night I get the same number. And when they will not come to be counted, I count the holes they leave.
You can see the transitive verb pattern clearly in this stanza. Consider the first line.
And now, each night I count the stars.
Baraka starts the line with adverbial information and then uses the basic transitive verb pattern.
I count the stars. Noun plus transitive verb plus noun phrase.
How do you know the verb is transitive? You could try asking a what question.
I count
what?
The stars.
Or you could even change the sentence to the passive voice.
I count the stars. The stars were counted by me.
A third option is to ask yourself what the noun phrases around the verb refer to. You know it is transitive because the subject, I, refers to a person, while the direct object, the stars, refers to something different from a person.
The second line, like the first line, uses a similar structure.
I get the same number, or noun plus transitive verb plus noun phrase.
The remaining two lines in the stanza use structures that are more complex than the basic transitive verb pattern. However, you can still see that writers can use basic patterns to create beautiful poetry. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.